So, anyways, let's begin. So, okay, Victor Pamplona, very special guest today. So right now we are streaming live exclusively on Noster, but later on I do plan on uploading this to YouTube. So, Victor, so could you like please introduce yourself for those who don't know who you are? And since this will be on YouTube, I'm guessing many people there will not know what Noster is. So, if you could briefly explain for the average, layperson what Noster is.
So my name is Vitor. I am the co-founder and the main creator behind Amethyst, which is one of the main Nostr clients, running specifically on Android today. But with the hope that one day we can reach other platforms as well. I have been doing Nostr for over 1.5 years now. So that's more or less the age of the client as of today. And I always said that, Nostr is in this point where we can start talking about lots of different applications and not only just be a platform for social media anymore. So I think that's the next stage for us. It's how to figure out, what all of those other applications are and how well we can do them inside a Nostr ecosystem. Nostr, for those who don't know, is just a base protocol for social interactions. So every time you have, two people trying to talk to one another, trying to send messages to one another, or trying to use the same system, or communicate back and forth in terms of information in any system that you see out there, which is most apps these days, they can make that transfer through Nostr. And the main difference on this protocol is that every message that goes back and forth between you two is signed by the private key that you and only you control on the device, meaning no other person can create a message for you. No other person can modify the message that you have sent out. Because in the end, the receiver on the other side, and of course you can do that yourself as well, can always verify what's coming in to be truthful because it matches the key that was used to sign the package. So in the end, it becomes a very powerful tool to just send information without trusting any server out there. As you probably know, when you send an email, for instance, if you're using Gmail, for instance, you can write any message you want. Google can change that at any time during the from the point that the email has been sent from your computer until it gets received to the other side. And that is true for all of the intermediary servers that these email goes through, right? So any of them can change contents of the message. They can change entirely, or they can change just to in a nuanced way so that it will be not you won't notice that they have changed. And the worst part is they can change without you knowing that they did change. So you never know when you're using something like an email if the message that the person has received is still the same message that you wrote. And that is true for most systems today. You think about, orders on Amazon is the same thing. Amazon can go there and can change whatever they want. So if they can certainly change your order. That's for the good and for the bad. Systems like what we used to do at the time, medical systems that control healthcare information, the provider of the system itself can change the database. And so if you want to send a prescription to one of the users, one of the patients, for instance, between you as a doctor and the patient, there are several systems in between. All of them have developers and other operational folks that have the access to this data and usually the right to change it on their servers so that, you never know if your patient is truly getting a prescription that you signed without using a protocol like Nostr that signs with just your key in from your computer that no one else knows. And it's virtually impossible for any server to change that information.
Awesome. So I want to get down into the healthcare topic later on. But again, for those who will be hearing this later on YouTube, because I do want to attract people from these other platforms onto Nostr to at least try it out, could you quickly explain what a client is?
So the client is just an application. So with Nostr, the protocol, we just define a few words for our own sake when we discuss and debate the protocol. There are things like clients, which is just an application running on the phone, on the desktop, or any other on the tablet, on any other electronic device you control as a user. And there are relays out there that are essentially transmitting the same message that you signed. Those relays, they just receive and forward your message to some other user. And as long as you and your and the other user that is communicating with you know which relay to access, they can see each other and they can transfer information. So the we usually call clients the applications and relays the servers that are not trusted, that you don't need to trust to can maintain your data without changing it.
And anyone can run a relay, basically, right? That makes it decentralized in a way.
And anyone can run a relay. And as a user, you can trust that people running the relay will not change it. They can still delete your messages, though. So there is some trust there. They can erase what you wrote. Because, you know, if you are sending pornographic images and so on, they have to protect themselves as well with that type of content. So they can always delete, but they can never change what you said.
All right, perfect. I think that lays it pretty clear. And you mentioned a social media use case and also a healthcare use case. So from what I think one can understand is that Nostr isn't just social media or healthcare. It's a protocol from which you can build basically any type of client or app. Is that correct to assume?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. That's very important to know. So anyways, I've been hearing some of your podcasts. You've mentioned that a lot about the healthcare space. You've been working on certain projects. So what do you think current healthcare system and doctors, what do you think, how can they use Nostr? And more importantly, why is it important for them to use Nostr?
So picture this, right? Today, and there are two types of healthcare systems, basically. There is a US-based one, which is controlled by large companies. So picture Epic and Cerner and all the big software providers that essentially provide the electronic medical record systems for hospitals and all the other systems out there that are just storing that information for you. In those systems, when you as a doctor send a prescription out, you will simply write in their system, and you will tell the patient, listen, I'm going to send this to the pharmacy that you want, but you don't need to worry about it. So I'm just going to, you know, press a button in my computer and it goes to their servers, passes through a few different companies, and then reaches the servers of the pharmacy that you want as a patient. So you can choose the pharmacy, but it's the doctor that is sending them that information kind of behind your back. You don't get to choose how that information flows. And it goes through corporations. So each company in the middle of this is getting access to your data and might use it for anything that they see fit. In our case, for instance, if you follow HIPAA compliance, there is a wording that simply says, you know what, if you can justify as that you need to do something, you need to see the data to provide the service to the patient, which is a very broad, you know, subjective definition of what you can do, then you can just share with other people as well. So picture this, if you are running your prescriptions through an AI system that is trying to figure out if something else is going on with that patient in the hopes that that's going to be a service to the patient, they can just share with that system because that's their authority to share. Like you as a patient, you don't get to control that access to your data. So there is this corporate mindset for a very corporate US-based system. Most of the rest of the world will be centralized on governments. So Brazil, most of Europe, for instance, China, India as well. All the medical information is being transmitted from doctors to some system at the government. So the Ministry of Health will run something that all the doctors will communicate through it. and the pharmacist will see it as well, in a similar way. So you have, you know, kind of like the right leaning way to do this and the left leaning way to do this. It's like either corporations or government, but in the end, you as a patient, you don't really have any access or any control over your data. And what Nostr allows you to do is, because you don't need to trust anything, like if a doctor writes me a script, I can just show it myself to my pharmacist, and my pharmacist can verify the signature of the doctor to know that I didn't change the script in my benefit, right? So before Nostr, you had to communicate with this out of the patient back, for instance, just because we couldn't really verify or we couldn't really trust the patient to not change the prescription that the doctor has given. So with Nostr, that kind of changed. And now you can trust the patient. You can just give your prescription directly to the patient in front of you. It could transfer, you know, through a relay like we usually do on Nostr, or, you know, phone to phone if you really want to be private. No one else needs to know, right? And you can then take that to the pharmacist, and the pharmacist can then check the signature if it matches the doctor's signature. And if it does, the doctor is certified to file that prescription, and they can provide the medication to the patient. If it does not, then something else went wrong. The patient is trying to cheat, but you will be able to see that very clearly when that happens. So Nostr creates this very interesting new layer where the patient becomes or has the power to stay in control of their health data. They can store everything they want. It doesn't matter for how long. They can store records for the past 20 years, and I'm not going to be able to change those records even today. So the idea is you can actually store everything, if the patient wants, in their own servers, in their own relays. If in Nostr we are used to, if every user can choose their own relays. So picture this, right? Doctor can just file the prescription instead of, you know, into the EHR. Well, the EHR may have a copy of it, but the doctor might also file directly on the patient's own relay, the patient's own server. And if you have multiple doctors helping write your multiple prescriptions for you, and they are from different hospitals, the hospitals don't need to communicate at all. They can just write in the same server that the patient is using, and they can also pull that information that the other doctor has sent to the patient. So they can, if the patient allows, those two doctors can see everything that is going on, the full health picture of the patient, without having to go through the IT systems or their own institutions and making sure they can communicate, making sure they can trust each other. So it becomes a much simpler problem to deal with. And it's one of the things that we're betting now a lot on, and just to get these healthcare systems going as fast as we can, because, you know, healthcare is slow, so this is going to take time and it's all fine. But if we start moving, the system builds on itself very quickly.
So let me see if I understood that correctly. I'm trying to summarize it. So basically, the benefit for the patient is better control of their own data, more privacy per se. So that's basically the benefit for patients. For doctors and institutions, it perhaps allows a much more agile bureaucracy, avoiding most of the bureaucracy and having immediate access to a patient's data instead of having to, for example, we spoke of before, in Mexico, there are multiple public health institutions, federal, municipal, and state. And these are, we have like four different types of public hospitals, and they can't communicate effectively between each other. So if I work for like the state government, I can have my wife and my children and my parents in the public health sector. But if my wife works at, let's say, the federal level, she has access to the like federal hospital, and then her children, parents, and blah, blah. But she decides to get attention in one hospital, and then suddenly another one, there's poor communication between them. So that's very, very inefficient. Mexico has failed in incorporating something what you're trying to do, like in Austria, to make a single like type of database, but make it private at the same time. So I think that's really cool what you're offering. It'll make things more agile and private at the same time, in the terms of patients' data. So,
well, and you have to imagine like how hard it is for those systems to want to communicate, because I'm pretty sure, like, if you go talk to them, they want access to everybody else's data. It's not that they don't want to do this. They want to. Usually the issue is either political, that, you know, the state is not supposed to know what the federal entity is doing and vice versa and so on, or it's something related to the authority of each person into this and the trust they have on each other. You know, one of the things that became very clear to me in the US, for instance, is that there is a lack of trust between the federal agencies and the state agencies, because they don't know if they are, what they are sending will be used against citizens in case of the state. You know, if the state sends something to the federal government, they don't know how it's going to be used. And the opposite is also true. If the federal government doesn't know if what the states are sending or how truthful that is, not that people will be cheating, but like how well it was captured by the systems underneath the state. So it's like there's a massive web of complications just because you can't really trust each other. So if you can simply just sign these payloads, just sign this data, you can reduce a lot of that need for trust between all these different players. And in the end, if the patient is responsible for their own data, you can always talk directly to the patient and get that information from the human behind this whole thing. You don't need to make a conversation between entities. If state and federal entities don't want to talk to one another because they're run by different parties, for instance, political parties, which is common, but they don't need to. They can just get the same information from the patient. You just need to ask the patient, get the permission, and then if the patient decides to share, so be it.
Yeah, it sounds like I'm curious about how you would imagine how the implementation would go about. It doesn't sound like it'll be a top-down approach. Maybe a bottoms-up, like, well, the way I imagine it, like practitioners who practice, you know, by themselves are not associated to a hospital, working with patients in a public group, something like what happened in El Salvador, no, I think in El Zonte. It started as a local project, and then Nayib Bukele later picked it up, you know, because it was working around this poor community. That's what I think would be perhaps the best way to implement it, but I don't know. That's just a random thought. What do you think?
It will definitely start from the edges, right? So the medical positions that are on the edge of medicine, you know, in the U.S., for instance, would be optometry for glasses or dentistry. So many of these positions they don't really work inside bigger hospital systems. They each have their own separate clinics. In some cases, they have their own insurance companies and their entire marketplace designed for themselves by themselves. So those marketplaces, they do have more flexibilities than, say, a major hospital adopting Nostr overnight, right? So it might come from the edges, it might come from the small businesses out there, it might come from the patient's own desire to have and control that data. And because the patient has it, most of the systems will just accept that that's one of the ways to do it and pull information from it. And of course, if they're already pulling it, it's going to be very easy for them to just push new data into the same system. You know, assuming everybody just speaks FHIR, which is the standard we use for medical data, everything else is very easy from a technological standpoint. It's all about politics. It's all about getting everybody together in the same room. And if they don't need to trust each other, it's going to be better.
All right, excellent. And look, I'm guessing for those edges, you said you the edges of the bell curve, right? The doctors you'd be going for. Do you think they just need to know what Nostr is by itself, or would it help them or benefit them a lot to know what Bitcoin is? Like, how would you plan on bringing this out? Would you implement some education, basic education around Bitcoin?
Yeah, they do complement each other, right? Very, very well. So on Nostr today, there are already many, many doctors that are with us. Hopefully many of them are listening. And they have already been thinking about how to integrate Bitcoin in their practices, usually from just a very simple payment standpoint, right? You do a service, you get some payment back in Bitcoin instead of using regular local currency. With data, is going to be a similar way of thinking. It's like, well, how can I if a patient comes in and the patient is already using Noster, can I just send a DM in Noster to that patient with my prescription? So that's the way you can start, you know, to migrate, you know, your regular patients into a Noster-based interface, because the patient is already there. There is no need to create NPubs. They already know what it is. They're already using our apps. So for those cases, which today are really small, and we're not talking about a huge number of people, but that's how we start. That's how the system will grow until we get, you know, better apps, more interesting applications that can explain what this entire system can be and how to manage keys and so on. You know, and then from the standpoint of, is this Bitcoin or Noster, it's kind of the same thing if you think about for the user. It's just like managing keys, making sure they are safe, managing profiles, Noster profiles. They may use the same profile to receive health data that they use for, say, social media activities, or they may create a new key that is just for the healthcare information, that is the only key they will send to doctors, and you know, that's how they will communicate about. So the user in the end can choose how to keep these things private or separated from one another or joined all together. Hopefully they separate it, but they don't need to.
Perfect. They just need to learn radical responsibility, I guess, first. And
in the end, like it's not going to be hard to imagine that some companies would help patients by providing services to them. Like in the same way, for instance, say Dropbox or Google Drive today. They just have a simple button that you can press and you can store all your photos there and so on. It's going to be something similar that a company that the patient trusts is going to manage, say, a relay, a Noster relay, and then it's going to offer that relay back to the patient at a fixed cost a month, you know, $3, $5, whatever it is. And they are then responsible for keeping that data safe. But the data is still signed. So even when they offer that service, they cannot change anything. They're just offering a convenience to the user, and in a way they'll just store this information for them. And of course, you know, once they have that information, they can think about, you know, what to do with it and what apps to provide that can access and simplify information to users. But if they have it over there, you know, that app doesn't need to come from the same company, because it's Noster. Anyone else can create another app that just does things a little bit better than what that company is providing now. And because it is Noster, people can just choose the other app, even though they're paying for the storage with the convenience player.
That's interesting. So like I just thought about something real quick. So basically, in the future, there's a possibility you could pay for like a family server, like you with your whole family members, you pay for just one server, that way reducing costs, but having privacy. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's definitely, it already exists. If you think about it on the Zap space, like when people zap each other on Noster, Zap is just sending Bitcoin to one another for those who are not on Noster yet. When you use a service like Albi and they have the little hub solution for the Lightning node, which is where you store your Bitcoins. In that service, you can actually add family members. So for payments already, that system is already there. For Noster, we still don't have that, you know, ease of use software there. But of course, the backend, the protocol itself is ready for it when people, you know, when devs are ready to implement it.
It's like the Wild West, basically. It's pretty cool. So
everything is so new. So there's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of space for companies. If anyone is listening to us that would like to come in and, you know, develop a new company that's working in this space, just know there's so much to do that virtually anything you do right now will make you one of the leaders for, you know, 1 or 2 years in this process of development. So it's very, very early. It's going to take a while for us to get the type of growth that, you know, healthcare would need to see. And that will give you a lot of time to code new apps, to experiment, to test, and to see, you know, different revenue models. The startups are like that, right? You have to test what consumers want to see. And that was just on your benefit. So if you are just listening to us and, you know, wondering, you know, about new opportunities, this is the place to be.
Yeah, like for those who think they're late to Bitcoin, they're not. But if you think so, you can be part of Nostr. It's something that's growing quite fast, I would say. And it's a great opportunity for anyone who has the courage, the funds, or simply the ideas to get something started. For those who are in the Zap.stream chat, at the end of this, if you're okay, Vitor, it would be pretty cool if they could ask questions and then you could answer them. Yeah?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Is that okay? Perfect. So if you guys have a question, I'll tell you guys when we start with questions, but make sure it's short and concise, please. Okay. So moving on with the conversation, I saw a post. What do you call them in Nostr? And a post, a.
Yeah, that I said it before. Like, I think we should still call them tweets, because I think the Twitter brand, the thing that Jack created, is so much stronger than just one company. Because, you know, that the company he created changed name, changed branding for like a year ago, and people still call Twitter, right? Like, you're tweeting around, there's not Xing around. So it's that brand is so strong that if we can have access to it, we should keep using the word tweets, just because it is what it is. It is what we got used to say. And it doesn't matter if you're using Twitter or not, it's still a tweet, still a little, you know, a short post that you can do in most of the Nostr apps. Not all of them, but most of them.
Yeah, I heard there's rumors, no? I heard that supposedly Jack Dorsey wants to buy back Twitter or something. I mean, X right now, and then build it on top of Nostr, something like that. I heard it in some podcast.
It would be so easy for X to just sign all the posts and keep going with the regular infrastructure, but also forward a copy of the post people are creating back to one of our relays. You can just sign and send it. It will be like a two-line code that anyone inside X can do this and just enable this interoperability between what X has today and our Nostr interfaces. And the funny part is, like, it would become the best Nostr client just because they have so much knowledge already packed into that application that they have today. You know, who knows? Maybe they decide to do it.
That would be pretty cool. But that's a very interesting point you just mentioned. So you don't have to start from zero, like build up from Nostr. You can have like the legacy system just integrate Nostr into what's already happening. So you don't really have to start from absolutely zero when building on Nostr.
Like on our field, like in medical fields, most of the systems that just create medical data, you can create and save it in a regular database as you have always done, but then just get the same data, sign it, and send to a relay. That's all you need to do. That's a, you know, it's 2-3 lines of code there. You use one or two libraries of one of ours, and you're done. Like, you're already exposing information. You're sending information to the patient directly. You are making it available for the patient to decide how to share and what else to put into this, the context of their own healthcare. You know, we keep saying that, like, you know, we think healthcare to me is social. You know, it's not something you deal with alone. Like, it's something at least your family members know that you are going through something. In many cases, your friends would know. In some cases, more distant friends will also know. Even work colleagues would know your health situation in some cases. So healthcare, because we all need social support when going through something, you know, not only in medical health, in mental health, but also in, you know, if you break a leg, everybody knows that you have broken a leg. That's not, you know, that's not a secret. So why not make it something that is social, that you can talk about it, you can have a system around it. In case for family members, for instance, you can share within each other all the prescriptions, all the health data information that doctors are sending them, so that if there is something happens, everybody still has access to that data and can help doctors make the best decisions by just resharing that data with them.
I just had like a wow moment, right? So like, it's the interoperability part, like that's a good sell. Like, you don't need to change everything right now. You can just integrate this into Nostr, whatever you have into Nostr. Because I think if you pitch this to a doctor or to a hospital, because they spend millions of dollars to install and maintain their databases, you know, for like patient files and everything. So if you suddenly come with Nostr, like, yeah, but I already paid millions and millions of dollars. So by, I think that's a good way to sell it, you know, so you don't need to do any of that. Just integrate here and you'll see how much more easier it is. And with time, maybe you can just completely switch over to it. But if you don't like it, you always have your base system in place.
Now picture this. Imagine if we go through this change and patients now have these many companies that provide the convenience of having of running their own relays and being responsible for your own health data, right? If that is the future we're going for, hospitals don't really need to hold your data anymore because they know what it is, right? They don't need to hold a copy. They might need to hold for regulatory purposes, but you know, after a while, they can just delete it because in the end, they can always ping your server back and re-download all your information back to their systems. So picture like the additional relief from a company executive to not have to deal with, you know, that amount of data on the servers, not really need to protect and secure this huge honeypot of information that we know most hackers are trying to break in, right? Why don't you just simply say, you know what? It's all with patients now. We don't need to worry about it anymore. We don't need to spend money about it. There is no cyber security threat against our hospital because we're just, you know, our doctors are using clients that are getting information straight from the patient's relays and are posting back to those relays. And we don't really need to host anything.
That is a really good sell, like a fantastic sell. And that's what I love about the Bitcoin space. Like it's all about developing parallel economies. It's not about destroying everything completely. It's building something on the side. So when fiat collapses, we got Bitcoin. So in this case, when healthcare collapses, when there's like a giant, I don't know, like electromagnetic warfare, you know, with EMPs and whatnot, and data servers are destroyed. Like if you have something like a Nostr, I'm thinking like it would be a much more robust system for preserving valuable information, valuable data. That's just, it's pretty cool. And I noticed in the beginning of today, you made a tweet where you were asking for people to define the difference between like micro clients, large clients, or something like that. I got curious, so why?
Fiatjaf posted this tweet that simply said, you know what, like a lot of developers are trying to put everything in their clients. They're trying to go for the super app in Nostr. They're trying to, you know, pack as many features as they can into Nostr. And I think that was okay like a year ago when Nostr was just starting off and we needed to get some momentum to grow the community. Today, if you think about just coding everything into one app, you're not going to finish in your own lifetime. It's just too much. So the pitch from VHF was like, you shouldn't go for the super app. You should go for smaller apps that work really well and that have been specifically designed for a given use case that you know it works and you know that you can spend say your own time. You don't need a team for it to maintain and make sure that interface works, you know, 100% of the time. And that is that goes so against most devs today because devs just want to put everything in there. You know, they want the likes, they want the zaps, they want the replies, they want the, you know, if it is a chat client, they also want to see a feed with all the posts. If there is a feed, they also want to see a live feed and like with all the video stuff. And I'm like, yeah, it's nice that we have some clients and Amethyst, the one I make is one of them, but it shouldn't be for everybody. It is a lot of work to just maintain all these features working. And as we grow, it's going to become harder and harder and harder. So the debate today was just about like, listen, guys, we need to go back to the basics. And if you are thinking about starting a new Nostr client today, you should be thinking about a minimalistic client with just, hopefully with just one function. So for instance, I just have one of my clients for healthcare. It just sends prescriptions for glasses. So it's just a single HTML page that you go to the website, the doctor goes to the website, writes the six numbers they need in there, and sends that as a DM to the patient. There is no, you can't see the DM, you can't reply to it. No, no. It just sends the prescription to the patient. That is the only thing it does. And if that client becomes the way the doctor can save, you know, a few minutes of time, the doctor will prefer using that client than a bigger system that has a lot of fields and a lot of buttons and clickies and so on. And like, no, I don't want to deal with any of that. I just want to, you know, type a simple page, load it up, and send my prescription because my patient wants, and that's it. I don't need to see it. I can use other clients to see and message back and forth with my patient. But in this specific client, I just want to, you know, code the medical information, sign it, and send to the patient in the way that he can share with, you know, an optician, and they can get their glasses. Like that, you can have the same thing for virtually everything in social media. There are clients today that only write, you can't read, they only write blog posts. So it's designed specifically to not do anything else and helps you write the best version of the post you can, right? Picture an AI helping, you know, me write my blog post that I was trying to do. And the developer of the client is not worried about listing out the blog posts, showing out new information, and have a very interesting algorithm to pick what's new and what's exciting and so on. No, no, no. You don't need to do any of that. Just do something that writes the post really, really well, because people will want to have that little edge. Like, if I can write better than the next author, I'm even willing to pay for that specific edge that I can get from this particular client. So that's, I think, the way we should be moving forward with Noster. To me, because Amethyst was designed from scratch to have everything, we'll keep pushing to have everything for as long as we can. But in the end, the math is very easy. If we decide to code everything, we either gonna have a massive team and some massive costs to maintain everything over time, or not everything is going to be done in the best way it could be done, right? Which means that these specialty clients have an advantage because they can just do one feature and do it so well that people are not going to use, say, Amethyst to do that feature. They can have multiple apps on their phones. And in the end, I do have this hope that maybe in 5 to 10 years or so, Amethyst as a client kind of ceases to exist because every other client is so much better than what we can do. Because, you know, 500 developers out there, each one doing their own client is going to be better than 500 developers working only on Amethyst and having to deal with all that, you know, team management and so on, because we're going to need to spend time with that as well. So we'll see what happens. But I think this movement to go to smaller and smaller clients is helpful. It helps decentralization, right? Because if you have just one client that does everything, it's like, what's the point? You can just use Twitter then, right? It's just like, it's the same thing. You are trusting that developer. But if you have multiple developers coming in from different sources, completely independent from one another, and they're all working together, and Noster enables that work to happen, meaning they are fully interoperable with one another, the 500 different clients will win over just one client that kind of has everything.
Yeah, I agree. Like, specialization, basically. So, like, is it possible to know, like, how many people are on your team right now, and how do you get revenue? Because I think that's an important thing for those maybe who will listen in the future. Okay, sounds interesting and all, but like, can I make money out of this? So, how do you guys recollect revenue?
So we are with the translators. We are about like 12 to 15 people, all volunteers. So we have like this Zappa Dev button on the app. That's the only source of revenue for Amethyst. It doesn't actually go to a company because there is no company called Amethyst. It's just a project. So that button sets up a Zap split with each one of the developers that worked in that version. So it's a really like value for value thing. If you like the new feature, the new version, you can zap as much as you want, and that money goes straight to the developer's pocket. There's no centralization point on any of this. It's from you to them directly. today, the amount of money that's coming through on that value for value model is big enough that for our size, meaning the amount of users, that if we successfully scaled up to a regular Twitter client, for instance, even considering that like not everybody will be as excited to pay as of today, the amount of money should be enough to sustain a client like Amethyst. But it is an experiment because there is no fixed price on any of this, right? The users can pay whatever they want. But it is a chance. And so because I think we are, so I am funded by OpenSats, one of the grant makers in our space. And I think because we are funded by them, one of the things that we can do that not many other people can is to test these new revenue models. And if we can make this work, it will be great for the rest of the ecosystem. If we can't, it's okay. We have, you know, we taken our shot in that. But I think if that works, then it becomes a very interesting value proposition for most developers, purely based on a donation model, essentially. So there's a lot of laws and regulations that just don't apply to the, because it's not a sale of a system. But we will see. Maybe the laws and regulations change later on and this becomes normalized. But at least right now, it would be better if that became true. For other clients and applications out there, that model could work as well. But if there are two types of clients, one is a viewing client that show you things, and one is the writing client that enables somebody to create something in the platform. When you're creating, that process of creation, it doesn't matter if it's video, if it's post, if it's tweet, that can be helped by the writing client. So the delta that you are providing is how much help you can give to the person writing it and using that system that will make them want to pay for that client. You know, picture like in this case, right, we are doing a podcast, and you can have very expensive equipment to save this podcast and to record it and so on. And you would be willing to pay if there's enough money coming back from our listeners, right? The same thing is true for the writing clients on Nostr. If you were sending tweets and you just want to, say, schedule them or do something more interesting with the text, something that changes over time, something that is always refined, a client that works on all those little features, which are not really Nostr features, it's just regular, you know, let's write something good kind of features, people will be willing to pay for that. So I don't have any question that writing clients are all set from a revenue standpoint. Reading clients, on the other hand, they have a race to the bottom because it's very easy to do something that just reads from the network. And there's always going to be the free stuff out there, right? So you are competing against free. If you're competing against free, then your algorithm to display information, for instance, must be worth something, right? People must be so good that people will be willing to pay for that algorithm to run for them and find the best posts. And that is actually very interesting because until now, you know, algorithms from, say, Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, they're helping that company, not the user, right? They are figuring out what's the best way to show new ads to you. With Nostr, now the user must actually like your algorithm. Like it's not an option, you know? So if you're doing a reading client, a viewing client, and you want to figure out how to make revenues, I would warp your mind in that way. Like, what is the extra that you are offering on top of the free client? Because the free client will always exist. That will make people willing to pay for that delta. And that is the delta that you should be focusing a lot of your time on.
Okay, no, that's pretty good. And there's different models out there. There's value for value, like you explained. But you can also charge for relays, and there's a whole. It's the Wild West. Find out what works best. Someone will eventually crack the code, right? And then if they see that works, then other people will simply copy.
But I mean, Storage is the easiest one, right? Like it's just a fixed subscription because somebody needs to store the data, and that data needs to be available. There's not really an option. It's, you know, that cost is there. It's just about how well can you execute that function for your user from a relay standpoint or from a an image or video server that you see. Even Zap.stream, for instance, have their own infrastructure to host the video we are in right now. And so they pay for that infrastructure, and that could be charged for users, both the creators and the viewers. But like, that is the easy model. It's just a regular subscription, like we have seen so many times in software, because it's really a subscription that is not like you have to pay monthly for these things, otherwise your data will disappear, right? Like, there is really no option in that. Or you have something that you can run at home, but then you have to have an advanced connection with your home and, you know, allow everybody to connect to your servers. It's just a little bit harder, and people like convenience, they would be willing to pay if you actually solve that problem for them.
Yeah, and actually, I agree. Like, you don't need to develop the next most advanced, sophisticated application, right? You can just look for very simple things, solve very simple problems. You can be heavily rewarded. I remember reading this book called The Blue Ocean Strategy. It's a company, like a business type book. So it's basically, even in areas that are considered like red water, like red oceans, like for example, the alcohol business or wine industry, if you can think of slightly about outside the box and tweak just tiny little things, you can create what's called a blue ocean, you know, basically an uncharted land with like, because sometimes customers don't know what they want, you know, because if you're out there asking, you're not always going to get like a concise answer. Sometimes you have to just throw something.
Yeah. So this is something you realize with users and customers in general. You have to propose something, you know, here is my solution to you. Like, do you like this particular solution? It's not about an idea. It's not about like, maybe if I do this X, Y, Z and so on. No. This is a thing. Do you like it or not? Right? And they can say no, and I go down and change it. But I have to make the proposal. And proposing is always a lot harder than just reviewing, right? Like, yeah, there's a lot of ways you can do this, and I can list you all the ways you can do this. But picking one version and then developing the best version of that item, that's the hard part. That's where, you know, you need back and forth with users. You need to figure out, you know, how well they are taking each one of these things on. But, you know, that's the regular product development. And if, you know, there's going to be enough people out there to figure this out for sure.
Yeah, I guess you initially have to at least be very proactive and not reactive, definitely. So, okay, real quick. Well, since we're talking about revenue, and this will again go to YouTube. So I think a lot of doctors have perhaps who are hearing this or will hear this, I'm hoping they more or less understand and see the value of Nostr. But for those doctors who don't understand what Bitcoin is, like, how can Bitcoin help improve a doctor's practice or a patient's even?
Yeah. You know, that is, we don't know. The true answer is we don't know, right? But we hope certain things can happen. The first one is, because you are doing a peer-to-peer payment, there are no other insurance on this. There is no other people approving it or rejecting your claims and so on. Medical services that are not an emergency can be shopped around. And you can actually build a better relationship with the patient if they are actually paying for that service. And yeah, this will have ups and downs and so on, because any direct payment system without an insurance company behind it will have. There are hybrid models where you have, you know, some payment via, say, Bitcoin and some others via insurances and so on. Those models will take some time to develop because, you know, Bitcoin and insurances don't really go together very well. You know, super regulating one side and super crazy in the other side. So that will take time, but they will get back to us in time, right? This is not, it is definitely in the future. We're not gonna not see it. It will be there. The question is when. So for doctors that are today on this, you can start exploring, you know, payment options for your patients through Bitcoin and other systems, meaning, you know, Lightning and so on, or Zaps maybe. You can offer one of the ideas we have been discussing for a long time is, because we have so many doctors on Nostr, it's not difficult to imagine you know, a value for value model where patients is simply paying for some tips and tricks on how to manage their own health. So, you know, the easy question for patients that we all have is like, when do I really need to go to the emergency department and see a doctor? You know, is a small flu, a small fever enough to go there and kind of scare everybody out? Or do I need something else? Those questions like are on the minds of patients all the time. And having health providers, and this might not be full doctors, and we might have nurses on this and so on, but somebody that knows that, you know, after a given threshold, go straight to the ER and just, you know, they're going to deal with you there. Before that happens, you can manage, you can try to do a few things, you can wait a little bit. But like that information for patients is just so hard to get and it's so valuable. So I could easily do like, you know, in the US would be like a $10, you know, zap for a doctor to tell me like, do I need to go to the doctor or not? Like, is this a time? Like, or where do I go? In the US, you have multiple things going on. So it's like one is going to be more expensive than the other. Like, what is the precise place or the best place for me to go to? So you could really think about a way to just help patients and trying to and getting the support on a value for value model, or just like, if you help me out, I'm going to zap you. And maybe the sum of the zaps is enough for some of that work, some of that income. And hopefully with, you know, the rest is just about starting to get a patient list. If you want to, you know, become an independent provider, that you want to leave the hospital and start your own clinic, you need to have patients, right, that want to see you. So you can start with Noster. You can start assembling those patients, putting them together and kind of helping them out in their health journey on your own specialties and, you know, being paid, but not maybe probably not paid completely out of this. But then at some point when you start your clinic, then you have a patient base. You can now, you can rely on them, not only to say to help you on your adventures in a for-profit model, which that's going to be the case, but also help each other and build a community of patients that are going through the same thing, and they would be able to help each other, you know, in their own patient journeys. Specifically for chronic conditions and other things that, you know, they just need community support. And if the doctor can be this simple point of verification that, yeah, the people in this chat room, they all have the same problem because I check them directly. There's no scammers here, right? There's no like outside people trying to sell things. No. These are all regular patients and they can talk to one another if they want to. I can just, you know, open that window for them and say, you know what, like you can talk to me or you can talk to everybody else and see what they have done with me and with other doctors. And we can figure this out together.
Yeah, there are so many good ideas here. Like, I think I'm going to steal that. I'm going to be like the, do I need to go to the emergency department type doctor? I'm like, yeah, sure, go. Yeah.
Because for you guys, it's super easy to say. And I was like, for us, it's like, we don't know.
10,000 steps. No, that's that could be a client. No, like the emergency doctor client. And like, ask me if you need to go to the emergency department or not. And from my perspective, as I used to, before I was had my own private practice, I used to be an assistant surgeon. When insurance companies were the ones paying, you have to wait days to get paid. And sometimes there'd be some problems and issues and it could take weeks to get paid. So that's a pain in the ass. So I think that's another reason why Bitcoin is amazing. You know, you get sent the Bitcoin, what you charge, and that's yours. You know, third party or anything like that.
And now picture this, because you are having everything that is happening between you and the patient, say all the tests that you have ordered and so on, they all come back in a signed way. So if you were like, if you're asking a lab to run a few tests on a blood sample and the lab sends a message back to the patient's relay with, you know, some final results there for you to see, the insurance company can also see that, right? So you can see that's a real record that truly happened. So when you do a claim, like it there is some safety on them on just paying out because it did happen. Like there is, if they are just reusing the same signature or the same public keys on each one of their messages, there is a reputation that is being built by that company. They're not going to just, you know, create new events without having a patient involved, because they might be got, you know, they might be got caught up, and in that the whole key then gets disappeared from the insurance systems. So because of the reputation that is being built by Noster, in the end, the insurance companies can have an easier time figuring out what's real and what's not, figuring out what needs to be paid and what's not, who is really working in the benefit of the patient and who are not, right? So even for them, because now they can see everything is not inside the locked system at the hospital, for instance, they can see, if the patient allows, of course, they can see everything that is going on. And they can just say, you know what, because you have done all the steps correctly, here is your claim fully paid. They can even, you know, they can go into the debates with you as a doctor, because that happens in the US a lot. You know, they try to not pay for everything. And it's like, yeah, they can go through that view, but you can always have the proof that somebody else signed and did some work. So it's not just coming out of your mind. There are other people on this together that are kind of like all agreeing that the patient needs that type of treatment.
That's just another powerful realization I had, like Noster and obviously Bitcoin helps incentivize people to be honest. That is so cool.
Because you need to trust the key, right? If your key is a long-term key, like, and everybody's based on follows, right? Like similar to social media, like if you start doing some crazy stuff, I just unfollow you, and you're not going to receive anything more from me, not even zaps or claims, or like you drop in that trust, your reputation in the network because of that.
That is so cool. And
what's funny? Like if you think about, so we were working a few months ago with the homeless population, and the homeless population in the US is a bit weird because they have too many agencies working with them at the same time. There's a ER departments because, you know, they have health problems. They have the housing authorities. They have the food stamp authorities. They have this whole thing going on. And the ER knows that if the housing and the food authorities don't do a good job, the patient will come back to the ER. So it will increase the cost of the healthcare system because the other part of the system is not doing their job. Now, picture this on Noster. Like right now, each one of these entities have their own systems. They manage those records independently. The doctor can't see what the housing authority is doing. The housing authority can't see medical records at all. What happens if they're all working on the patient's relay? While the housing authority might not be able to see health data because they're not doctors, they're not trained to keep that information safe, they could still see some of the things that the patient might make available for them. And because that communication is now happening, they can see, oh, wait, so the patient got into the ER 2 days ago, and now they need to file a new thing for their housing, but the person is on the ER, like he won't be able to file. So we need to get in contact with them, get an extension, and do all this paperwork so that he doesn't lose access to the housing that he was ready to get, kind of thing. Because the systems are so complicated that, you know, any of these minor issues on procedural issues will derail the chance of that person getting some public housing out there. So just think about this, like there are so many people trying to help them and none of them are talking to one another. What if, crazy idea, they all came together and talked in the same relay that the patient already has set up? That it could be by the state or it could be by one of the NGOs that are helping the homeless population out there. The homeless themselves, they can have their Noster keys that they access the system via their own personal cell phones, which they do have. So it's, you know, it's not that difficult. And you can send notifications in Noster. If there's something that is going to be delayed, they can let each other know, and they can help, you know, doctors can help, can let social workers know, social workers can help, can let the housing agency in government know. And because they're all trusted, because the public key is being reused, they now have a reputation in place that, you know, if the social worker says that this is going to be delayed, it's probably true because they're working with that social worker for, you know, many years. in the same system. So it's not going to be something that, you know, they need to check to see if it's true or not.
Oh, that's just amazing, like how many things you can do with it. Now, not that I think the government is efficient at doing anything, right? But I do think that this could help it, perhaps improve it, make it a bit more tolerable to to work with government. But that's a cool
And if you don't amazing. Like government, you can have private players doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
If they're all NGOs and they're not talking to one another, which that's the current state of it. Like, I think in LA, there are like 16 different agencies that don't talk to each other and still helping the same people on the streets. So I'm like, what's the point? You know, like, sure, yeah, half of them are government people, half of them are private people, but they're all kind of in the same boat. And if they don't talk, nothing really is going to go in the most efficient way possible. And if that is the case, we all know what happens. You know, people are not going to get the housing they need.
Yeah, I can imagine. I want to be respectful of your time. Do you still have some time, Victor? Peter?
Yeah, sure. We can keep going.
Perfect. So real quick to mention for doctors as well who are interested in joining Oster and getting paid in Bitcoin, telemedicine is going up. Like people are using it more and more and more and more. And I've already had the experience of being paid in Bitcoin using Albi and Albi extension. And there's even a calendar that's for free. It's cal.com. So you can get paid in Stripe, through PayPal, and you can integrate an Albi extension, which is, for those who don't know, it's basically a Lightning wallet, a wallet where you can receive Bitcoin. It's a lot of other things, but that's just one of the functions. So people book a consultation and they can be in Argentina. I've already had people in Saudi Arabia and stuff like that. So there's no friction with the PayPal, with Stripe, with international bank transfers. You just get paid Bitcoin right away. So for those doctors interested in speeding up, you know, the payment system, Bitcoin is such a powerful tool. And I would recommend you HODL that Bitcoin. What does that mean? You just hold on to it and you don't exchange it into fiat if you don't need to. But that's just a little tip. Anyways, Victor, also I've seen that there's a recent implementation for chat messages on Amethyst, NIP 17. So could you tell us a bit about that? And is it as private or more private than SimpleX, for example?
It's more or less in the same broad group of specifications. So it's quite private. The newer version of SimpleX could be more private than the Nostr version, but we don't see as many details right now on that newer version to say with certainty, because, you know, these things evolve. But the current version of NIP 17 transfers all the GMs through relays that you choose to be the DM relays. So it's your choice and you have to make that choice yourself. It's not something that the app will give you for free. Like you have to go there, out there and search, you know, what's the good DM relay provider for me to just store all my data. You know, it's an effort that, because like think about this, right? If you're just downloading, say, Signal is one of those apps that you download and start using it. What you don't realize is that everybody is just using Signal servers. And because it's just using Signal servers, they know everybody that's coming in and out. It doesn't matter how good the encryption is. It's just centralized so much that they can use that amount of data to try to figure out who is who in all of these sea of encrypted things. When the users start deciding, you know what, my relay is different than yours, and I get to choose that when I start, you know, using the app. It creates a point of decentralization that becomes more private over time. And the role of the relay is very simple. You write your relay on your settings, and everybody else will send messages to that relay, and you will just download your messages from that place. So it's just a way for others to know if you send it here, I will see, basically, right? And that relay is built in some ways that only you can download your own messages. So unlike everything else in Nostr that everybody else can download, like your posts, your Twitter posts, and so on, because they want to see, with GM is slightly different. People don't get to download your GMs. But let's say there's a bug on the relay and people can download your GMs. Everything they will see is that your public key is receiving an encrypted package. They won't know if it's a GM or if it's something else, like a like or a private zap or a, you know, there are so many types out there. They won't know if the time of the event is correct, because the time is, we have a randomization factor there up to 2 days. So within 2 days, they don't really know, you know, what, because like picture this, right? If you're tracking users and you know that, you know, at 3:55, somebody sent a message, I just need to look at the server and like, what are the messages that arrived at that 3:55 event? Like that, it doesn't seem very private, right? So we play with the time to give us some extra privacy in that space. And then, of course, it's fully encrypted. So you're not going to see the sender. You're not going to see the message. You're not going to see anything else. You're going to see that it's an encrypted payload, and that is that user is receiving. So you see that that if the relay has a bug, and you can see what the relay has, which is already an exception, then you just be able to see that that Vitor received, you know, 3 encrypted things that could be DMs, that could have inside of them medical information or not. Who knows? But it's just like, yeah, he received those 3 things. And if the relay has a bug, then anybody can download it. But other than that, it's fully private. And not even the metadata is available for others to see. Neither the relay, because now we're using Tor as well, so they don't even know your IP anymore. But they do know your key. So if you're receiving, they know that you have received something. They just don't know what it is.
Yeah, there was a recent bot in on Oster that says, "Oh, at this time, this person sent this message. This person doesn't tell you what the message was, but yes, that there was a message sent." So, but with NIP 17, that disappears.
That disappears. Yes. So all of those, the bot can only say that to the older, to the legacy version, which is NIP 04. If clients that are using that specification today, which we do still have very popular clients like Demos and Primal, is still on NIP 04. They are leaking metadata everywhere. And those who have migrated already to NIP 17, then that is hidden. That bot will just not work anymore. At least not with that level of information.
A problem is that apparently if you use NIP 17 and you send it to someone who's NIP 04, then they don't receive the message, right? Because I had that right. Experience. Yeah.
So both clients have to have coded that particular NIP, which is also true for NIP 04s. Many clients don't have DMs at all, right? So it's like they wouldn't see it because they're not doing that. But we hope, you know, people migrate over. It's just, you know, it's a process of development that takes some time for folks to go through. And it is encryption, so it needs to be well coded. So it just takes its time to get from one to another one.
All right, perfect. Real quick, so for those who are on Zap.stream, we're getting close to the end. So if you guys want to be thinking about your question, remember, short and concise questions for Vitor. Okay, Vitor, this is mainly a carnivore-related podcast with a touch of Nostra and Bitcoin, of course. I have to ask, have you ever tried a low-carb diet, and more specifically, the carnivore diet?
I'm not into any diets. I have never tried diets specifically, but I'm Southern Brazilian. And, you know, Southern Brazilians is just like Texans here. It's like it's meat-based everything. We, you know, our vegetarians eat chicken. So it's that place that I'm coming from. We eat meat virtually once or twice a day at home. So it we're really into that, the meat aspect of it, just because we like. It's not because anything special. On carbs, like we have tried to reduce, but I wouldn't say that I follow any particular diet at all.
How common is junk food in your diet, or in Southern Brazil, how common is junk food? Not really?
Not at all. Like you know, like from Mexico, like our diet is basically rice, beans, and meat. In the South, same for Brazil. It's like, you know, so carbs are coming from the rice, and I think there are carbs on beans as well. But, you know, it's much healthier than the type of carbs we see in the regular U.S.
Totally, totally. Actually, I was looking into Southern Brazil for like, I know Brazil has a citizenship by birth. So if your child is born in Brazil, the child becomes Brazilian, and then if the parents stay there in Brazil for a year, they can become Brazilian citizens, which is pretty cool. A good way to get passports. Like the only negative there is that you're subjected to Brazilian tax if you stay there for a year. I guess anyone can like decide whether that's good for them or not. But
and if you are American and you moved over there, unless you give up your citizenship, you're paying the Brazilian taxes and income taxes and the U.S. income taxes at the same time.
Damn.
So yeah. It's going to be a lot.
Definitely. How are taxes in Brazil? Do you know?
Similar to here, I would say. We tax, I think, average tax is about 50% of the product.
Oh.
So it's a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't, like, if you consider everything, like, I don't think that's much different from the U.S.
No.
Like,
okay.
Because the income is also high. We have property taxes and so on. So if you group them all, like, yeah, we're paying a lot of taxes, you know.
Definitely.
It's like, sure. And it's like moving states in the U.S. Like, some states charge income, or others don't charge income, but they charge property taxes that are much higher. So you pay the same thing, but it's just, like, in a different way. So to me, it's like figuring out which or moving around because of taxes. And this is particularly interesting because people talk about startups and taxes a lot. They think like, and I have done startups before, I'm doing another one, but they think that we choose where to incorporate because of taxes. And like that, no, that never crossed our minds. Like, taxes is just something you pay. And yeah, there are some benefits since you have those certain things in some ways, but like most of the time it is what it is. And you're just like, just bake that into the cost of the product, and you know, you move forward. Because if you keep playing that game of like which tax system is slightly better or slightly worse for you, is the same thing as playing the game of credit cards. Like, which credit cards give you more points and so on. Yeah, you might spend a lot of time in there, but that's not the way to spend your life.
Actually, yeah, I'm really glad you told me that in southern Brazil, there's a lot of meat there, because actually the way I want to plan out my life, the goals I have planned out for myself is I want, for example, get a tax residency somewhere like Paraguay. If I had more money, I would do it somewhere in the Caribbean where you have 0% tax. But and then use something like, I don't know if you know who Andrew Henderson is from Nomad Capitalist. So he talks a lot about the trifecta method. So in a lot of countries around the world, if you stay less than a certain amount of time, you're not subject to tax there. For example, Mexico, Colombia, if you stay less than 6 months, you're not subject to tax. So you put your tax residency in these low tax countries, and then you can move around different jurisdictions. So it's cool that you mentioned southern Brazil, because that sounds like a cool place to stay there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Argentina, definitely. And I've been told that Paraguay also has very good beef. So I'm a carnivore myself. So yeah, that's why I'm learning about these different countries and customs.
You would definitely like those two parts of Brazil for sure. I like the Rio Grande do Sul and Santa Catarina, the two states in the south. That is super meat-based, so much so that it's hard to find the vegetarian in there. It's like restaurants don't even know what to cook when you show up. but I don't know. On the tax side, like, if all that work has significant tax gains, sure. But like, if you're just playing the little numbers, like 2% or 4% or
6%,
like, that doesn't, like,
doesn't really matter.
Excite me at all. It's like, I just, you know, I like, I prefer to spend that time just coding something that is much more valuable, that I can just pay the tax and move on with my life.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree with that totally. And last part before we get to people's questions. Last thing I ask, Vitor, so you guys prepare your questions. If you want, you can start writing them down now. Well, actually, not a question, it's more of a statement. If you ever feel like you want to go into carnivore and you need help for whatever reason, you can just send me a message. Like, I really do, especially you, that you're working hard, like, I'm guessing full time basically, and with startups, there's a lot of stress and work on the body. Like, a common thing that people repeat in the carnivore, when they go carnivore, is that the clarity of mind, their energy increases, you're much more alert and more focused. So I think that would benefit someone such as yourself, who has to be, I'm guessing, 100%. Do you go outside though?
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Is that true for any meat and any cooking technique, or is it only specific ways to do it that will give you that benefit?
No, there's different ways because even within the carnivore community, there's like little tribes or subgroups, right? There's the guys who are just eating pure red meat, like actually a couple of people who do lion diet, red meat, water, and salt. And then there's other carnivore where you can have obviously any type of meat. It can be poultry, you know, fish, seafood, shellfish, I mean, pork, etc., red meat especially, eggs, dairy. So that's like one version of carnivore. And you basically, what you do in these type of diets is you discover what's best for your body, what works good for you. There's people with autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. Honestly, most of them do better off, at least initially, doing the lion diet or just red meat because there's less of an allergic reaction. It has to do with the anatomy of the animals and their physiology. We don't have to get into that right now. But most people can tolerate your, let's say, average carnivore diet with like any type of meat. And dairy, if you can tolerate it. But yeah, there's a lot of ways to do this.
Love
yeah,
it.
Fantastic.
Maybe I'm already doing. Maybe I have been doing this for the past 30 years, and yeah. I don't even know.
Like, yeah, that's why you're so productive. Exactly.
That's why we are in Austin, you know.
Exactly. No, yeah.
We should do it like a carnivore client. Like people can.
Oh my
ask
God! Yes. And
then do some value for value transfer. Build a community around it. You know, so they can help each other. We
definitely.
That should probably be a way to develop a client where people can report how well they feel after different intakes and so they can help each other on figuring out what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, there's definitely, especially initially when you're transitioning to carnivore diet, a lot of problems can show up. Or if you are a diabetic or personal hypertension, you do need help with your medications. You have to you need a medical, someone with medical knowledge to help titrate the dosage down because that could be dangerous. I don't know if you know, but Dr. Ken Berry, a prominent an OG carnivore doctor, has joined Noster, you know, a few weeks ago. So he could be like a marketing, like the main guy marketing, pushing a client like this. Like there's so much opportunity here. I hope someone just picks up the coding knowledge and courage to do so. But yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because again, this smaller clients that we are looking for on Noster, like if we can build an app or maybe three apps, one for each of the operating systems, by the same person or by different people, but essentially help people in the same community and allow that community to come together outside of the noise, the broader noise, which is Noster in general, you know, I think it would be hugely beneficial to the community itself. And you can find a place that you can always go back to discuss these things.
Perfect. Yes. Well, definitely.
And you can zap each other.
And zap each other.
Because, you know, yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, on this very stream, over 4,000 sats. Amazing. See? So that's a record for me. So, guys, if you have questions, put them in the comments right now for Vitor.
There are a lot of comments. Okay.
Yeah, if you can read them yourself and see if you see something you want to answer, go ahead. I'm looking for questions. Okay, so I think if no one has a question, I guess I'll ask the last one. For those doctors or anyone who just wants to do any live streaming on Noster, what would you recommend? Zap.stream or how do they go about it? Do you just start from
Zap.stream, Nosternest, if you want to do just voice. Because some people are more comfortable with voice. But Zap, they're just different, right? So Zap.stream allow users to ask many questions in chat. Noster.nas do that as well, but you can also promote them to be a speaker in real time. So, you know, if they want to say something interesting, they can come in voice and just say that out loud, which sometimes is good, sometimes is bad. But, you know, it's you do have options available today. And both are made by the same people. So, you know, they're all kind of together and integrated. You can watch them on Amethyst. Well, not Nosternest as of now, but we're getting there.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Nosternest is basically like spaces on Twitter. We have a question. What are the best ways to keep safe the NSEC instead of logging in every app?
So if you have an Android, that is an app called Amber that you download and you just put the NSEC in that application. And that application will communicate with all the other apps and sign things for you from there. So the other apps will definitely not have your key. That's true for Amethyst and for other folks. If you are on the web, you just need to choose one of the extensions, browser extensions, that you can use. Albi, Nose2x, Nosotros, I believe. No, Nosotros is an Android client. There is one for Safari that you can just pick one. And it's the same thing. The key stays in the extension itself, and the web page doesn't know about it. So you can log in to as many clients, all those web clients that are out there, you can log in safely in them all, and you will see when they are trying to sign something. So if you are a little bit skeptical about what they're doing, you can verify everything, or you can just fully trust and not be bothered by replying, sign, sign, sign all the time. On iOS, I don't think things are there yet. I think Apple is putting some barriers in place for that don't allow people to just have that, you know, signing experience. So you have to insert your NSAC kind of everywhere. Some of these applications have something called NIP46, which is a way to store the key in one place, generally a server, but then you have to have access to a server. And then every time the app needs access to signatures or encryption and decryption, the app sends information back to that server. Not as good as the other two options, but still available as well. You can do that on Amber with Android as well. It can communicate through that server. You can sign up online on a desktop on a computer, and then turn on your phone and be signing on your phone for the things the desktop wants to do. So it's not even like, your NSAC is not even in the computer. If you don't trust the computer you're using, you can just, you know, keep it in your phone, which is usually safer than the computer, especially if it's Windows or so, or the public computer specifically.
Oh, perfect. Another question. I can only see the NPubs here on Zap.stream. I can't see the names, but one guy's tagged someone and says, I guess it's me, are you ever concerned about doxing your face to the internet? I guess you can answer that first, and then I'll answer it myself.
No, I have been doing this for a while. I have no fear at all.
Yeah, same thing. There has to be a public face to something, especially for doctors. I think if your doctor is a mysterious entity who never manifests himself, I think that's a problem. I think you need to feel a bond or connection with your doctor. So I don't think if I were to start talking about controversial things, then I would just make a different profile and never show that it's me, right? That's the cool thing about Noster. You can be as private as you want and as public as you want. It's consensual. Question. Again, I have no idea who this NPub is, but are you headed to SEC in Madeira this week? I'm guessing that's you.
No. I won't be going there, but I heard it's good, and I heard people are learning a lot from that program.
Perfect. I have no idea what that is, though. What is it?
It's a sovereign computing workshop, essentially. A bunch of people, a bunch of devs, usually get together to develop new clients, and they all go to Madeira, spend like 3 months in there, I believe. And then by the end, they have some demos, and they come out of it with, you know, a start of a client. And there are a lot of devs that go there just to help them out. I won't be going, but I think Pablo is still going. Maybe GG is going and so on. So we have many of the folks that we know and like there to help you like on a one-on-one basis.
Perfect. Okay. Well, Victor, that was amazing. Before we end it up, do you want to send people anywhere? Where can people find you or support your work?
Just come to Noster. You know, it's not hard. Just pick a client. If you are on Android, you feel free to use Amethyst or Primal, for instance. If you are on iOS, Primal is available there as well, or Deimos. Noster as well is a good one. If you are on the web, you have so many options, Coracle, Iris, Snort, Primal, and so many others. Just pick one and start, you know, creating your reputation in that system. Start building conversations around the topics you want to talk to. If you want to keep it private, there are some of these clients like Coracle, for instance, give you communities and groups that you can just talk with each other in a private way. Otherwise, everything is public, and you know, we should be able to find our communities in the sea of information that is out there.
Definitely. I think on the show notes, I'll add there's a website. I think it's nosterapps.com. You can see basically every single, I guess, popular client that's out there. So test out whatever you like. And would you say that Primal is perhaps the easiest one for complete newcomers, like to set up a profile?
Yeah, if you want like a Twitter-like experience, yes. But because you can also start with blogs, and you can go to, say, habla.news, and that is just a blogging platform. And if you like to write blogs, you just create an account in Nostr, and you can create your entire reputation in the blog part of Nostr, and then come back to, say, Twitter later on when you have some followers there as well.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think it's very important to mention before we log out. You can change client whenever you want, and you will have access to your profile. It's not like in Twitter where you can't take all your followers' information over to Facebook or things. So that's a very powerful thing about
Better Nostr. Yet, you don't need to have a preferred client. Because everybody thinks that, like, you know, the mindset of fiat, right? Like, you have to choose one and kind of, you know, be bound by that brand or by that product. No, you can just use 2, 3, 4. You can intercalate between them. There is no need to choose anything.
Perfect. And I'll add your NPUB to the in the description as well, so people can follow you on Nostr. Forgot to ask about that too. NPUB is basically your identity, your public identity, right? And your NSEC is your secret identity per se, or how would you describe that exactly? Your private
so
keys.
So picture this: if you're logging into any system, the NPUB is your username, the thing everybody knows that it's you. It could be your email or, like, depending on the system, how you log in. The NSEC is the password. So it is like the NSEC cannot be known by anybody else. But the username is important because people can tag you and they can cite you, and that's all using the NPUB in that system.
Perfect. All right. Well, Victor, thank you very much. I think it was a very good conversation, and I think it'll help many people. So see you soon, and hopefully we can talk again later when you release your new startup.
Yeah, we'll do.
Take care.